This is the Bridge of the Faithful podcast, featuring your host, Jenna Erlandson.
Hey guys, and welcome to the Bridge of the Faithful podcast. I'm Jenna, and we are all on this faithful bridge together. These episodes are just my documentation of the things that God is showing me as I search to understand what faithfulness really means. You can find this and all other episodes at botfpodcast.com. You can also connect with me at facebook.com/botfpodcast, email info@botfpodcast.com, and newly learning Instagram. You can find me there at botfpodcast. I like to be consistent. So today we are here with Chris Starin. We met on the Christian Podcasters Association. I think I've made more friends during this quarantine.
Yeah.
Through that than I have through like this. I'm a huge extrovert, and so it's been a little hard for me to just stick at home, but I've made a lot of friends just by getting out there into that.
Isn't that great? Yeah. I almost don't know how to relate to my friends in real life anymore.
I know.
Just DM me. Don't worry about it.
Send me I've gotten into Marco Polo with some people, and that's been really fun.
Yeah.
And time consuming, but it's a lot of fun. So Chris, I was looking at his bio on his website for his podcast, Truce Podcast, which we'll talk about in a minute. But his bio says he is an award-winning filmmaker, novelist, improv comedian, and podcast host. He's the author of the novel Cradle Robber, a book for tweens called How to Survive a Money-Making Summer, and the writer/director/producer of the films Bringing Up Bobby and Between the Walls. So he has no idea what it's like to create anything, apparently.
No.
What are we talking about here? And then Truce Podcast is how we met. And that is, it's incredibly well-produced podcast. It's more almost story-like, but it goes deep into the history of the Christian church. And I love this last line here that you wrote. It's all about how we got here and how we can do better.
Yeah.
I love that.
Yeah. So, it's a tough row to hoe, but that's the goal. Yeah.
It's really deep. It makes you think in a good way, and maybe makes you uncomfortable in a good way too. So totally go check it out. And I'll put the link in the show notes as well for people to go check out
your
podcast.
Thank you.
So with all those creative outlets, how did you learn? Let's go just general and say, how did you learn you were a creative person versus how we talked about before, how you were creative versus like a mathematician?
Yeah, yeah. Well, I mean, this is going to take me back a little bit. So do you remember Juno, the computer program?
No.
That's okay. It was an early email platform back on dial-up internet. And me and my best friend, we would email back and forth like every single day. We emailed about what was going on. And I realized, you know, I'm basically writing a book with all of this writing. And this is me at 11 years old. I have this realization. So I said, okay, well, I'll just write a book then. And so that was How to Survive a Money-Making Summer.
Okay.
Wrote it when I was 11 and 12 years old. And my mom and I self-published it and shopped it around to bookstores and things. It was a really great experience, but it kind of got me that taste for the independent spirit to be like, oh, I don't need, you know, a big publisher to take this book out. I could do this, you know, I could take it around. It just kind of started there. And, in high school, our drama teacher recommended that our class we had to do a project, but it had to be something we haven't done before. So we made a video called Bottom Dollar, which was just a really ridiculous, silly video. But it kind of got my brother and I have a twin brother named Nick. It got us in this thing where we're like, I really like doing these silly videos. And so in our senior year, we did something like 40 videos. And we showed them on the closed TV network in our school. A lot of kids did not pay attention, didn't like them, just talked over them. But we loved doing that. So it was just a way for us to be creative, to have fun, to make friends. And it kind of just snowballed from there. And so I think that I just have always kind of been creative. And maybe that was our older brother was on three soccer teams at one time. So we were like literally like going from soccer game to soccer game to soccer game. And so my twin brother and I, who we don't like to watch soccer, at least not, you know, three times, you know, like multiple games a week. And so it was like, well, we got to keep ourselves entertained. So Nick and I were always trying to make each other laugh, telling stories, making up characters. And that just kind of all, you know, congealed into a filmmaking career and a writing novels and now podcasting.
I love how you talked about your mom and how she helped you do that. So, and obviously your brother helped you with your creativity and all of that. So is that a big thing in your family? Is that kind of where you had a lot of support and that helped you move forward?
Yeah. Well, I mean, our parents are, they own a small heating and air conditioning business in Ohio, not too far from where you live. And so they're both sort of independent people, you know, so they kind of created their own small business. And so small business was just kind of in our mom's wheelhouse, you know? So she saw that I had this book and I wanted to encourage me. And so, saw the opportunity to teach me how to, we started an LLC. We created a logo and trademarked it. And so she kind of walked me through, this was kind of her way of teaching me how to make a business. And at the time I was homeschooled for about 4 years, mostly just like it was fifth, sixth, seventh, eighth. And so this was homeschool era. So it was kind of a project, you know, a way for me to learn how businesses work, which is kind of ingenious. You know, why would you want to read about it in a textbook when you can actually go out and, you know, go to the library at the time, you know, the internet wasn't so great, and look up trademarks, you know, and file business paperwork and stuff. So it was kind of a part of the homeschool curriculum. And they're both funny people, but they're not not overly creative. They're much more business oriented. My dad is very gifted with, like, you could walk him up to a pile of bolts and screws and like thingamawatsits, and he could put together a machine. Like, he's just very gifted in that way. And then my mom is like very business minded, and that's sort of their creativity. And then I'm. Nick and I are sort of out there creating stories creative. Yeah.
I love how this shows the different facets of what creativity can be.
Yeah.
Like, it doesn't just have to be art. It can also be engineering or with business. There's a lot of creativity that goes into marketing and all of that too. So how did you journey from making those videos for school into writing, producing and directing your own movie?
Yeah. Well, my brother and I went to, again, my twin brother, Nick, we went to film school. We went to a very secular liberal school called Ithaca College. And we chose it because we wanted to shoot on actual film. And this is, you know, starting in 2000. And that was still much bigger than it is now in Hollywood, shooting on actual film. And because anybody can shoot on video, but to shoot on film was like a whole, like an old world craft, you know? Mm-hmm. And so we wanted to learn how to do that. And so we got this education. It was very much sort of independent filmmaker based. And then we went to Los Angeles and I interned on the Bernie Mac show. And then we worked on the first season of Hell's Kitchen as production assistants. And then Nick actually got bumped to a camera assistant. And then we did a whole bunch of other work as camera assistants. As I was a first AD on two feature-length Christian films, Unidentified and The Secrets of Jonathan Sperry. And then it just seemed like, boy, everything is kind of working out. We're getting all these skills. And we had a few different offers for funding to make our own movies. And Nick and I were in our early 20s, you know, like, what? They're going to give us money. And so we moved back to Ohio with the intention of making our first feature, Between the Walls. Unfortunately, all of the funding fell through. So we'd already moved back to Ohio and we're like, gosh, we'd like to make this movie. So we took that entrepreneurial spirit we had as kids and used our own money. We only had $20,000 and we shot this movie. By the grace of God, it got picked up for independent distribution. We had to do all the legwork, actual shipping and making the DVDs and that kind of stuff and advertising. Rich Cristiano, who is a filmmaker who made Secrets of Jonathan Sperry and Unidentified, he hooked us up with distribution and I could get them in stores, but we had to do like absolutely everything else. So that was like literally designing the DVD covers to, writing the scripts, making, every single aspect. My brother had to figure out how to author a DVD, like a dual layer DVD. I had to learn Photoshop to make the DVD cover, and I had to learn PHP to build the website, which PHP is a programming language. We were doing everything from beginning to end, which is a really lousy way to do it. But it's kind of how we've had to do everything, because if you want to tell a story that nobody else is willing to tell, you got to go independent.
It's hard in one way, but good in another, because it frees you up a little bit more.
Creatively, yeah, it does. It's difficult in that, like, now I'm hosting the Truce podcast, and it's each episode takes 20 to 40 hours to produce, every episode. So I also have a full time driving a school bus. And so I'm working, like 60 hour weeks trying to get this out. So the problem with independent is that you're stressed and it's hard to find money and backing and stuff. But the joy is that you can be freer with what you're discussing and how you're going to do it, and sort of break some of those rules and hopefully expand the market a little bit. Because right now the Christian markets are pretty tight. You know, there are a lot of really tight specifications about what works and what doesn't. So I'm hoping to expand that a little bit. We'll see.
So what does it feel like for you to get inspiration, especially since you get it in so many different ways?
Oh, yeah. Well, it's often like a deep sense of conviction about a given topic. So for bringing out Bobby, our second film, which is a comedy, my brother and I were volunteering at a campus life organization every week, helping out with teenagers, trying to share the gospel with them, playing games with them. And a bunch of the kids in our group were goth kids. And we realized that a lot of adults, Christian adults, well-meaning Christian adults, were afraid of goth kids. But our experience with goth kids was always that they were often the most intelligent and kind kids in the whole group. We had like a really great group of goth kids. The inspiration came to be like, I want to reach those kids, the ones that are overlooked by the rest of the Christian world, who are looked at as freaks. I want to create a character who is lovable and intelligent and a goth kid. That's kind of how Bringing Up Bobby started, was this idea, this desire to reach kids that we were working with. Then for Truce, oftentimes I have friends all over the place who have different opinions, and that's religious opinions. They have different like economic opinions, and what's holding them up from really either really what's holding them up from sharing the gospel. So that could be like a political affiliation that blocks them, or it could be like I did a series on pyramid schemes, because I noticed a lot of Christians are targeted for pyramid schemes. I was like, how do those things find Christians? How do the pyramid schemes work? And then what does that do to the church when somebody is trying to build a relationship with you so they can sell you a product get you involved in a business model that is going to fail? Because over 99% of people who join an MLM, a multi-level marketing scheme, will lose money. So if somebody gets into a pyramid scheme or an MLM, and then they lose money, they figure out that this thing was a scam, they might look at the church, because maybe they were reached out to at a church, they might look at Christianity and say, that's probably a scam too. Something used to make money. So I'm always looking for those kinds of things that are glomming on the Christianity, claiming to be part of the faith, but are actually hindering our witness. And so right now I'm telling this year-long story about how communism in Russia impacted the American Christian church. And it showed, it came out through persecution in the Soviet Union as religious people of all stripes were persecuted there. And then in the United States, since Russia was going towards atheistic communism, the United States started bonding capitalism, patriotism, and religion, not necessarily Christianity, but sort of vague religion together. And so that kind of created this era now that we look back on as like the 50s and 60s as being like a Christian era in the United States. And so I want to kind of look at what is it that created that sort of Christian era so that now when people say we're in a post-Christian America, okay, well, what did the Christian America part look like? What created that? And was it good for our witness or was it bad? And how are we dealing with the legacy of that era? Because you have... This may be a longer answer than you want.
That's great.
But, yeah. But, you know, if you say the 50s and 60s were a Christian era in the United States, you've got a few problems. Because in the 50s and 60s, the United States was dealing with Jim Crow laws and, racial tension in the country. And not unlike what we're dealing with today. And we were literally exporting those ideas, when we were trying to share the gospel to, say, South America or to Africa, those kind of ideas would come with us. So you would have white missionaries in Africa who are trying to share the gospel with people in Africa. And then people in Africa are like, yeah, I mean, you say that we're all brothers and sisters, but people who look like me are being sprayed with hoses in your country. So how can you want me to believe this religion that is oppressing people like me? And so you can see how Christianity, when we tie it to something else, creates a lot of extra baggage and can hinder our witness. So that's kind of what the show is about. And you can see it covers a whole bunch of different stuff. And like you said in the introduction, it can be challenging to hear. My goal is like not to make you feel bad for being a Christian or anything, but more to understand how we got to a place and how we can do better. So, yeah.
Yes. So I love that. No, I love hearing how your mind works through all the different genres and all of the different facets. I keep saying facet because I can think of a different word.
That's all right.
But, how fluidly you can go between all of those for one main purpose.
Yeah.
I really like that.
Thank you so much. It can be, it's difficult. I mean, as you know, as a podcaster, it's a lonely world sometimes, mm-hmm. you know? So I try so hard to bounce ideas off of other people. But it's ultimately me. And so it's going to be an imperfect thing. I actually had like an hour and a half chat with a friend of mine today who was saying that he was really confused about where the show was going. So it's, I've got a lot of work to do to try to catch him up, and try to do better. That's sort of, again, the downside of being an independent, is that I'm a one man staff. And, if I had a team, we could catch these things.
Yeah. I got to help out with one of your episodes. It's not out yet, but I listened to it. You sent it to me and I'm so excited for this episode to come
great.
To share with people and just like, be like, what do you think? And cause those discussions.
Yeah.
It's going to come at an interesting time. So
yeah, it's right before the election. Yeah. And actually if you'd like, you can play it on your feed. You'd be welcome to play it. The goal with the 2020 presidential election, there's so much negativity right now. And so much, our candidate, whoever that is going to fix the whole world. And so what we end up doing is talking about it, you and I, and in the show and a whole bunch of other actors, is that the story in 1 Samuel where, the people demand that they get a king. And God says, well, I am your king. You know, you don't need a physical king. And if you get a king, they're going to put all these restrictions on you and collect taxes, and your livestock is going to belong to them. And they can tell you whatever they want to do. But the people are like, I want to be like the people of the world. And so they end up getting a king who does like exactly what God said that he would do, you know, just causes all sorts of mayhem. And I kind of try to bring it back into today, that we tend to think that our political, you know, party or candidate, whoever that is going to fix the world and it's going to make it better. And then those evil people on the other side are really going to pay for it. When that is not the gospel. The truth is our king is God and Jesus. And the ultimate power comes from them. And that's what we should be seeking as a people instead of these political candidates. Because I feel like, unfortunately, right now, especially the Christian church has been so closely tied to politics that we're really hurting our witness. I get so convicted by that. And again, you know, I have friends in all sorts of different belief systems and economic models, and it's amazing how they're just not listening to each other. I had a friend two days ago, tell me, I don't have any friends who are liberals. And I was like, how have you gone through life with like, it's just not knowing anybody in that, on a whole side of anyway. I want to try to encourage Christians to think back, like, what is our mission? And how can we reach people that God says that he loves? Even if we consider them our enemy, God told us to love our enemies. So we can't just ignore them. Because that's not loving them. So ultimately the show is to keep bringing us back to that realization.
I feel like you've answered two of the questions that I have on here. Yeah. How do you want your creations to represent God?
Yeah.
And then what ways do you allow God to impact your creation?
Yeah. When I think... It's a real challenge. Anytime you go away from just sort of reading the Bible out loud, you get into this dangerous position where you can have a very two-dimensional God. And it depends, you know, on your denomination stuff, what God looks like. He could be a very judgmental God. He could be only love, and love could mean a whole bunch of different things. And so the goal is generally for me, and across all these different projects, to present a three-dimensional God. So that, you know, God who's very serious about sin, but who is also gracious enough to forgive us if we follow Jesus. A God who loves to give good gifts to his kids, but doesn't have to. And so that you have to kind of hold all those things in tension. And so that's generally how I want my stuff to represent God. Is to try to fill in those pieces we don't want to look at. And then my hope is, and I do try to pray for these different episodes, but I mean, I'm not exactly like an Old Testament prophet, so I don't always hear of God's voice on things. But my
That'd
hope,
be nice, right?
Yeah, it would kind of help. I don't know. It would terrify me.
Yeah, that too.
My hope is, through these things, that God, the convictions that God's putting on my heart, or that are on my heart for the people of God, will result in good things, will hopefully bring us back to the message of Jesus. First I have to stop confusing people. That's what I'm working on now.
So, that goes into my next question.
Yeah, go for it. Run around.
So I was going to ask, what are some barriers for you when you're creating?
Yeah. Well, the tough thing is, the Christian audience is so we're really used to a couple of different things. One of those is, telling people exactly what to believe. So I used to listen to a Christian radio ministry that will go unnamed, and they literally around election time would put out a ballot for all of your local stuff, all of your local elections, and tell you exactly what to vote for, because those are the Christian candidates and those are the Christian propositions. Don't worry about thinking. We're going to tell you what to believe. And so one of the barriers I'm trying to overcome with Truce, and I'm really struggling with, is speaking to a market that is used to people just telling them what to think. Whereas I'm trying to leave it kind of vague, sort of present you with a bunch of options and be like, what do you think about this? I'm even to the point where I'm starting to include discussion questions in the show notes, so that if you want around your, you know, dinner table, you could have a conversation, a follow-up conversation about the episode. So to just spark more conversation. So that's one of the big barriers, is to try to overcome that, that thing, that everybody's used to just being told what to believe. And then also there's this, this deep desire, especially right now, for folks to hear good news. And it feels like the church is always under attack, at least the way that we market things, we're always in a constant state of panic that those people are at the gate and they're going to invade and they're going to persecute us. And so there's, even though there's a lot of people pushing that message, there's also a lot of people pushing that we have to be positive. And so I'm trying to overcome those things, because I want to, first of all, calm people down that, you know, the barbarians are not necessarily at the gate right now, because we've been saying that forever and they haven't come, you know, in a long time, in the United States. but also, it's difficult to talk about the church and be honest about how we got to a certain place without critiquing it. And it's hard to be positive all the time. So like, as part of my job as being a school bus driver, I am a permanent sub. So that means I just get on whatever bus they tell me to get on and I drive it. And part of that job is I am also an evaluator. So when there's no extra route to drive, I'm supposed to be making sure that everybody's doing their pre-trip evaluations, that they're, you know, handling student conflicts well, that they're, you know, driving safely and following the law. And as part of that training, we've been, as evaluators, there are three of us, we've been trying to encourage everybody, like, listen, this is not us trying to be jerks and tell you that I'm better than you. This is just a natural part of all of us getting better and making this a safer community to live in, is doing these evaluations. So that's the school bus thing. I'm trying to do that through the podcast. To try to encourage people, like, listen, we're going to talk about some hard things in the church and some stuff that, you know, some little idols maybe you're holding close and you don't want me to break away, but we're going to have to talk about them. Those can be difficult conversations, but that is what makes us better as believers, in any way of our part of our life, is addressing a problem. And so a lot of the times on the show, I have games, or I have sort of funny or interesting ways to discuss something so I can soften the blow. But we're often talking about, or I guess I'm often talking about, difficult issues. And that can be a barrier to some people, because they want to tune into either like somebody yelling at them to tell them the barbarians are at the gate, or somebody who's, you know, covering really soft stuff that's going to make them feel better. And I can't do either of those things. and so this, it's a different show. It's something that the market is not asking for, but I believe, that, there is a market for it. I just have to find it. So, yeah.
Is it hard to hear the feedback?
Oh my goodness. Yes, it's so hard. Because people disagree with each other so much. I mean, literally somebody, I did this, three-part series on the fall of the Russian monarchy and the rise of communism in Russia, because I wanted people to understand what actually happened rather than be like, oh, those nasty, stupid Russians don't understand. And so they went communist. I wanted people to actually understand what caused the Russian Revolution. And so I did this feedback survey on my website, that's still there if anybody wants to participate. And, I had One person say, I had no idea why you talked about the czars, the Russian czars. And then another person said, those were my favorite episodes of the season. So it's like, you just, it's really confusing. And again, as a one man show, there's only so much I can do to anticipate these things. And there's not a whole lot of, I don't have a lot of time to run the episodes by people, because I'm working so many hours and I really don't have a great social life. So right now,
nobody does.
Well, yeah, but I mean, it's gotten harder with COVID because there's, you know, yeah. It's harder to get with people, but, because I'm working 60 hours a week, I just don't have energy. And so, yeah, it can be disheartening, and I'm trying to build a thicker skin because I'm a pretty sensitive guy, can be bruised easily. And I'm a bit of a people pleaser. So I always want everybody to love the show. And as anybody creative knows, you're never going to make something that everybody likes, you know, somebody's going to hate it. And they may not just be,
and they'll let you know usually too.
And they will let you know. Yeah. It's usually the negative ones that are the loudest voices.
Yes.
But at the same time, I get some really remarkable feedback from people on this show. I don't think I've ever done anything that was this positively received and this well received. But because I am touching on such sensitive issues in the church and stuff that nobody thought that they wanted to talk about, you get weird feedback. Even from good friends, I get weird feedback. So it's just a matter of trying to sort through what information do you want to keep and take to heart and try to make changes to make it better. And then what stuff do you just need to ignore? It's a really hard thing to do. Especially because I would like to do the show full time and eventually quit the bus driving. So in some ways I need to appeal to the market. But I also know that the stuff that I'm interested in, the stuff that I'm convicted to tell, is not the stuff the market wants. So there's just a lot of tension there. Yeah.
So what advice would you give to someone who's in a similar place where they're doing what they feel God has called them to do? They're not necessarily getting all good feedback. I personally love it, and I love context, and I love digging deep and understanding the stuff. So there are people out there like me who obviously like that.
Thank you.
But there are other people who don't necessarily want to dig deep into that, and they want to look forward. I'm a person who wants to look back and learn from it. Other people want to move forward.
Yeah.
Different personalities by that. But what would you tell someone, what helps you to keep going on in the conviction that God gave you, even when it's hard? What's given you courage and strength to continue on?
Yeah. Well, so I'll be honest. I just started seeing a Christian counselor. Okay. That has helped me a lot. Just to try to work through things, because as much as productive as I've been making movies and books and writing short stories and all sorts of stuff. I also did an animated series. I don't think I mentioned that, called, Pint-Sized Parables that you can get on YouTube. So I've done so many different things, but none of them has taken off. And I've been creating stuff independently since I was 11 years old, and none of it has taken off, and I'm almost 40. One of the things that has helped me a lot has been, first of all, admitting when I need help. And so that's where the Christian counselor is coming in, is to try to work through some of that, the failure stuff. Because, you know, people say, you know, if you just reach one person, it's worth it. But then it's like, well, you don't fundamentally understand what it means to be a broadcaster or to try to make money at something because you want to survive. Not because you want to be a millionaire, but you want to survive. You have to make money and build an audience. So the main thing for me is like, find good people that you can talk to. And who will give you honest feedback, and make sure that people, the reason people aren't buying your stuff or buying your product or listening to your show or whatever is not because of you. first of all, it may be something you can fix. So it may be that like you're doing a mommy blog and there are a bazillion mommy blogs that are just like yours. So maybe you just need to tweak your thing a little bit so you can make your stand out. And so that's like really good feedback. And so you have to be willing to invite that stuff. But of course that means people are going to throw a lot of trash at you. So be willing to like ignore all the trash. But then also, like I said, find people who love you for you outside of your show or your project or your stuff, and invest in those people, and get them to give you good feedback. And then when you have, mental, I don't want to say troubles, but you know, when you're troubled, like I'm going through right now, you have some issues you're trying to work through, seek actual help for that through somebody who's qualified. And that takes a lot. It can be very humbling. I've had a hard time even telling close friends I'm in counseling because there's a stigma about that. But it helps. And it makes a big difference. And how are you going to get through this if you don't seek appropriate help? It just takes a couple steps. So I think a whole mixture of all of that stuff. And then you have to choose in your life, what is God calling you to do? And that's a really hard thing to read. So one of the most convicting parts of the Bible I've ever come across is, I want to say it's Ezekiel. God tells them, I've given you this message, and you have to tell the people. And if you tell the people, all the guilt is off of you. But if you don't tell the people, I'm going to take it out on you. Hmm. And that is sort of the prophet's responsibility. And I don't see into the future or anything like that, but God deeply burdens me about the church. Like I get really deeply burdened about different things we get caught up in. And so part of me feels like if I don't tell people these things, it's going to be on me. You know, like I'm not responsible once it's said, you know, it's all on them. But I am partially responsible to get the word out. So as a creator, I think that a lot of my stuff comes from burden, for the church. So it's one of the reasons, like my mom has encouraged me over the years to like, why don't you just tell like a secular story? Like just go write a love story or something that will sell. And it's like, Mom, I can't, you know, cause I get these incredible burdens that I can't deal with. So that's kind of my thing. In some ways, writing and producing and doing podcasting is therapy for me, is me getting that message out that otherwise will just sit with me and judge me. So it depends on your calling, I guess, but above all things, find a good group of people to surround yourself with and hold on to them tight. Yeah.
Well, thanks for being willing to share that. There's a lot of people out there that also feel that stigma about getting help. And, you know, you don't think that about other people, but you still feel that way about yourself.
Right.
So hearing that other people do it and need help and that's okay. I just love that you were able to share that. So thank you for trusting me with that.
Praise God. No problem. Yeah. I have had several of my friends tell me in the last few months about their experiences going to counseling. And that's one of the things that got me into it. And so I know that the power of being open with people gives you permission to do it yourself. So if somebody out there is burdened, seek a good counselor, ask around at your church. There may be somebody in your community you can reach out to who can help you. Yeah.
And I think for those of us that are more creative, we tend to be more emotional.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. I think we're just more in tune to that and how that affects other people. It's just almost like you can connect empathetically in a different way a lot of times with art. And so we're a little more sensitive to the things that we're feeling and how that burdens us or weighs on us. And other people are more logical and they don't necessarily think that. So I'm hoping maybe if, because that's not saying that logical people don't need therapy.
Right.
Or counseling or anything like that. But even just hearing it from someone, that might be something that they need and that's okay.
Yeah.
I think that's amazing.
Yeah. It's an important thing. Especially for a man, it can be, even more of a stigma thing, because there, especially in the Christian world, there's this big push that you have to be a leader and you have to be flawless. That is such a destructive way to go about things. It's so destructive, because that's, we just set people up to fail and to be caught in secret sin, or to fall apart or to run away from the church. Whereas like the amazing thing about the church is that if you're there and you're a born again believer, you have it, you admitted you are a sinner. That's what we all have in common, is to admit that we're not perfect. And that's why we need each other. But then we put up these walls to pretend that that's not the reality. But fundamentally, we're there because we're sinners who need saving. And so it's just a weird, thing that we've got going in the church right now. And I hope we can get away from it. I hope we can get away from it.
So faithfulness is the big theme of my podcast.
Yeah.
And, I really like to dig in and see it in two ways. First, how is God proving his faithfulness to us? Mm. And second, in the title, Bridge of the Faithful, I picture it as God built that bridge. He's faithful. He made that connection for us. But we also have to step on that bridge and show our faithfulness to God. And not that we have to do it flawlessly, but we just need to step on it and then move step by step closer to God that he provided for us. So I don't know if you feel like showing the two facets, but how has God proven himself faithfulness through all of your creative outlets and journeys? And how have you worked on your faithfulness toward him through them?
Yeah. Sometimes there's wrestling. Sometimes there's wrestling involved, where God is silent for a long time. And it's a lot of like sort of beating your head against the wall to be like, God, why, you know, why am I still driving a school bus and making this show? There's always some of that. But I think he's showing himself faithfulness in that he's given me that group of people that I can trust, like my brother. I don't think if I weren't a twin and my brother wasn't such a great guy, and like in exactly what I need, I don't think I would have made any of the things I've made. And so God has been faithful in giving me those support systems. Because without Nick, I don't know that I'd be brave enough to do these things. I would probably still be back in Hollywood making junk that I don't believe in. that's how I think how God's been faithful, is especially through Nick. And then that bit of courage to step out forward is that if you're given a burden, as I'm frequently done, if you're given a burden, you have to deal with it. If God tells you to tell somebody something, you should really tell them. And so that's what the show has been a lot of talking about some very hard issues that I'll lay awake at night and be like, I bet I'm going to lose all of my audience when I talk about this thing. But I'm so convicted by it that I can't not do it. And so you just have to be faithful. So I have a series that came out in the last few months, after talking about Russia and how it became a communist nation, I wanted to turn around and look at, okay, so we're going to talk about how the United States reacted to communism. What is the United States? And that seems like a really basic question. I got some pushback where people were like, I don't know why we're talking about this. But to me, it was fundamental that if we were to understand what Russia was, and I spent a lot of time figuring that out, we really needed to figure out what the United States actually is. And so there were several episodes talking about, is the U.S. a Christian nation? And ultimately coming around to the answer of no, which is really hard because in the Christian market, everybody wants to hear, yes, yes, of course we are. But the evidence points to no. And then it was followed probably rather unwisely by a series about, okay, what is the physical United States? And it turns out we don't like to talk about it, but we are an empire because we have territories in our possession, if you will, that have taxation without representation, that don't have the rights to vote, and don't have their citizenship is not guaranteed. like you or I being born on the mainland. And we don't like to talk about those things as the United States, because we see the United States as this city on a hill and a beacon and a quote unquote Christian nation. But then when you start to, and I was heavily burdened to talk about this stuff, to try to say like, well, we like to say that, but what is the United States really? And it's a complicated answer. It is both a nation that has done great things, but also a nation that has done a lot of bad things, or a lot of sort of stuff that'll make you uneasy. And so I think I've tried to be faithful with those burdens that have been put on me. And that can be very difficult. Like I said, there's always this terror that the audience is just going to run away. I mean, I guess that's just how it goes. You just have to kind of be faithful with what's put in front of you and do your best.
And God gives it to us in pieces.
Yeah.
One step at a time. But that burden is, you know, at least you know where it's coming from.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. So, and I think I've kind of seen how throughout my life, God has put me in the position where I had to be that guy who gave, you know, was just upfront with somebody about something, like, because it had to be done. And that doesn't make you the most popular person. And I try to be really good about it, you know, try to deliver it in a way that's loving. But, you know, ultimately you can do a lot of good with a well-placed word, you know? So yeah, that's the hope.
Love it.
Yeah.
So this seems like a good segue into talking about the passage that you have chosen to end with. Uh-huh. And I've been kind of peeking at it, and you chose all of Psalm 46.
Yeah, it's not that long. Don't worry.
No, yeah. But I'm reading it and I'm looking at, like, this is so relevant to what you're saying, but also to, like, I'm almost in tears reading it because it's so relevant to different personal things happening in my life, but just in general, the world right now.
Yeah.
And so why did you pick it? And then we'll read it here in a few minutes, but why did you pick this passage?
Yeah, yeah. So Nick and I, one of our life verses is verse 10, which is, he says, "Be still and know that I am God." And I am such a doer. As you can tell, I've been kind of productive over my life. A little bit. I'm such a doer. And I tend to think that if I don't do something, then it's never going to get done, and people will be disappointed, and the world's going to fall apart, and I can get really stressed about that stuff. But Psalm 46 is kind of about God is going to do his thing, and he is going to bring peace, and he is going to establish his kingdom. So you people, just be still and know that I'm God. And it says, I will be exalted among the nations. I will be exalted in the earth. So it's like, as much as I want to worry about is God going to be glorified? And what can I do to glorify him? It's like, it's going to happen. You know, be still, Chris. And so that verse is rather convicting to me. And I think this whole passage is really, like you said, really convicting, especially as we, you know, we get so caught up. We're so filled with anger right now that whoever those people are in your life are coming. And they're going to destroy us. God is constantly telling us, it's like, listen, your hope is eternal, and your hope is in eternity, and I've got you. And we're so bad at listening to that. So I needed this reminder today. So
before I go, I'm going to just read the whole thing, because I love it. And I think it's a perfect way to end, and a perfect way to kind of give some hope to people out there that might be anxious about the way the world is right now, or just need a little bit of a reminder of who's got this and what our real job in it is. But just thank you so much for getting on, for sharing your journey, being vulnerable, trusting me with that. And I really know this is going to encourage some other creatives and just other people out there who listen.
Thank you for doing your show and for being faithful.
Thank you. So here we are, Psalm 46. God is our refuge and strength, an ever-present help in trouble. Therefore, we will not fear, though the earth give way and the mountains fall into the heart of the sea, though its waters roar and foam and the mountains quake with their surging. There is a river whose streams make glad for the city of God, the holy place where the Most High dwells. God is within her. She will not fall. God will help her at break of day. Nations are in uproar. Kingdoms fall. He lifts his voice. The earth melts. The Lord Almighty is with us. The God of Jacob is our fortress. Come and see what the Lord has done, the desolations he has brought on the earth. He makes wars cease to the ends of the earth. He breaks the bow and shatters the spear. He burns the shields with fire. He says, "Be still and know that I am God. I will be exalted among the nations. I will be exalted in the earth. The Lord Almighty is with us. The God of Jacob is our fortress."
This has been episode 33 of the Bridge of the Faithful podcast entitled From Burden to Creation with Chris Starin. For show notes, go to botfpodcast.com/episode/33. You can find us on social media at Facebook or Instagram.